Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Varsha.
And today on the pod, we are going to talk about midterms, obviously, and what happened. We're going to celebrate. We're going to have a little party and what happened on Tuesday. We're also going to talk about some not so happy things. Jeff Sessions resigned / was fired. Let's see. There's some bullshit about birth control, a lot of really awful things to get to. But first, I just want to ask Varsha, what were you doing on Tuesday night? Were you like watching the returns? Like, what were you doing?
I was in class until around 7 p.m. Pacific, but then I went over to a friend's place and got supremely wasted. It was amazing. Because literally, as I'm walking home from class to go drink with my friends, I realize MSNBC has called the House for Democrats, because the whole time class, I'm freaking out because 538 is like, oh, the Democrats' chances have just dropped. Oh, they've just dropped even more. Oh, we're all fucked. Amy McGrath lost her seat. And I'm like freaking the fuck out trying to talk about history for 3 hours while all of it is like getting like really, really shitty. And then Charisse Davids wins. And I text Devin and I lose my shit. I'm like, holy fuck.
Oh, and then she called me as soon as she got out of class and was like, we got the house. And then we just yelled over the phone.
I literally was yelling in the street. People were staring at me. And then I started telling people in the street just randomly, hey, the Democrats took the house. And then they started cheering back at me. It was amazing. I swear to God, I did it for like 3 blocks. It was great.
Yeah. Well, I was by myself at home watching the returns come in, but it was definitely a mixed bag in a lot of ways, but it was ultimately a really good night.
Yeah, it was a roller coaster of emotion, but a lot of the emotions were good.
All right, Varsha, so we've already talked a little bit about it, and you referenced Charisse Davids winning in Kansas's third, and that was historic because she is the first Native American women ever elected to Congress. Also, she is openly gay. And you wouldn't think, ooh, yes, Kansas, you are going to elect an openly gay Native American woman, but they did. So there were a lot of other great, great things to come out of there. So what were some other really positive things?
Dana Rohrabacher lost to Harley Ruda.
Boy, bye.
In California's 48. It was so good.
I was canvassing for Ruda.
Oh, yay. So Ruda won, which is great. We also got at least 30 to 35 other seats. The votes are still being counted. It could be close to 40 seats.
It's a lot more than we thought.
Yeah, it's a lot more than we thought. We were just aiming for the 23, right? We literally were just like, let's get to 23. We take back the house. It's okay. And then we were like, fuck that. Let's just win almost 40 seats. We also had, as you mentioned, like two Native American women. We also had really great LGBTQ representation. Besides winning the 30 plus seats in the House, we flipped 7 governorships.
Seven.
We flipped them in Wisconsin, Kansas. Fucking Kobach lost. Wisconsin, Kansas, Maine, Michigan, Illinois, Nevada, and New Mexico. Nevada has a fucking trifecta. They can do whatever the fuck they want in that state now in terms of like Democratic shit. It's amazing. Stacey Abrams, even though she is trailing Kemp right now, she is refusing to concede because it is very, 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 very close to a recount. She is suing for the absentee ballots that are like not being counted yet. And so we really should be donating to her recount efforts and trying to support her, because it could happen. It could happen.
Yeah.
In the Senate, we did not do as well. We lost Indiana pretty quick. We lost North Dakota. We lost Texas. And we lost Florida. But we gained Nevada. We won Jackie Rosen. Jackie Rosen is going to be a fucking senator. It is good news. The thing about Nelson in Florida, though, it is going to probably go to a recount. I am like really hoping it goes to a recount. Because even if we lose the recount, at least it goes to a recount and every single vote has to be counted. It's the same thing for Gillum, who lost to Ron fucking DeSantis in Florida. Gillum has now said he is waiting and waiting for whether or not it's going to go to a recount, because it's the votes are still being counted and it is so close to an automatic recount.
And I think that a lot of this too, it's not even just about getting this close and the recount, but it's about making sure every vote is counted. That's something that Stacey Abrams has really been talking about. She's like, this isn't just about winning or losing. And that's what I said when I talked to her before. Like, this isn't even just about the governorship for her. This is about an ideology that she believes that people have a right to vote and have a right to be heard. So that's why they want a recount. And that's really why they want to make sure that they sue for these absentee ballots, because it makes a difference.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, even if she ends up losing this recount, it still matters that every single Georgian got their vote counted, right? My dad had to fill out a provisional ballot in California 25th. And I know Katie Hill has already won in California 25th. Woo, woo, go Katie. But I'm still hoping that his provisional ballot is eventually counted, even though like, you know, the most consequential votes already went his way. I'm still hoping it's counted, because that's how democracy fucking works, right? Exactly. Some other names to throw out there. So we mentioned Charisse Davids. The other first Native American woman is Deb Haaland. Davids is also
who I interviewed for Candidate, if you want to hear from her. She's fantastic.
Yeah. And Davids is also the first openly LGBTQ candidate, as we talked about. But then Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar are the first Muslim women elected to Congress. So if you're thinking, oh man, was this victory really good? Think about what it's going to feel like for Mike Pence to swear in those two women on a fucking Quran. He's going to have to hold a Quran.
It's honestly like the best Twitter joke.
And swear in two women, because he hates women and he hates Muslim people. It's going
to
be
I hate to burst. I hate to burst your bubble, but Pence doesn't actually swear in representatives, the Speaker of the House does. But you know what? You know that he still hates it so much that the little vein in his forehead is just throbbing constantly.
That's
like,
true,
you know that that's happening.
It only happens in the Senate. I forgot. But still.
I know.
It's still. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the youngest woman elected to Congress.
Abby Finkauer, also the youngest, other youngest woman.
The other youngest woman. The Kentucky County Clerk, Kim Davis, who fucking refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples in 2015, lost to a gay man.
Whom she denied a marriage license to.
Yeah, it was great. She lost by 700 votes. So don't tell me your vote doesn't fucking matter, people. There are some people out there who are like, oh, I'm going to perform socialism for you. Let me be, you know, full on, like, progressive, awesome person. But then let me also tell you my vote doesn't matter. Fuck you. Because this person...
Lucy McBath in Georgia 6, which was the special election between John Ossoff and Karen Handel in 2017. Karen Handel lost to Lucy McBath, who is a gun rights activist. And the margin there is so close, you can't even see it. So when people say my vote doesn't count, I'm like, we're talking about hundreds of votes that are deciding these elections. Not thousands, not tens of thousands, hundreds.
Exactly. And so you cannot tell me your vote doesn't matter. And if you are like in California and you think your vote doesn't matter in California, no, it still fucking does, because you are participating in a democracy. You're participating in a democracy. You're saying, I choose you, or I choose the other person, or I choose no one. Go fill out a blank fucking ballot, but your vote matters. Okay. Also, Jason Lewis, who complained, is a GOP congressman who complained that he could no longer call women sluts, lost to a woman, Angie Craig, Democrat Angie Craig. And so it was a good night.
Also an openly gay woman married to another woman with four sons.
it was a great night for gay people. I'm really happy for gay people. I'm also really happy for women, because we elected over 111 women to Congress.
111 women.
111. Dance party. The matriarchy. We're so close to the matriarchy. So close.
We're so close. Here's the thing. A lot of people on, at least on my Facebook feed, have been saying like, oh, well, it wasn't really a blue wave, but like, we annoyed the Republicans, or like, this isn't really going to matter because there's still corporate Democratic shill nonsense here. you know, just something. And I'm like, of course it was a blue wave. Look, a blue wave was never going to be, we retake the House and the Senate and every governorship and everyone votes Democrat. That was never going to be what it was, ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Stop moving the goalposts. Stop raining on my parade. It's really rude.
Exactly. But what we did do is we flipped the House. We flipped state senates and state legislatures. We flipped governorships. We got Dirty Dean Heller the fuck out of office in Nevada. Boy, bye. Kris Kobach Chris Kobach was told to pack his fucking bags and go home. And that means something, right? Is it perfect? Is it exactly what you wanted? No, but grow the fuck up. Because this is what it is. And this is what we've done. And by telling me that it doesn't matter, or that, oh, you know, we're still just, you know, a ruling corporate overclass who are beholden to donors and there's no difference between these Democrats and Republicans. You know what? I think the first gay Native American woman to be elected to Congress has something to say to you. And I'm sure it would be much more polite than this, but the gist is go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Because if it didn't matter, if this kind of change wasn't creating something, why would we care? Why would it be important to elect women and people of color, and especially women of color? Why would it be important to elect gay people or you know, Muslim people? Well, if it doesn't matter, then why are we doing it?
Yeah,
of course it matters.
If it didn't matter,
give me this. I hate that.
If it didn't matter, 100 million fucking people wouldn't vote. If it didn't matter, we wouldn't have had the highest fucking turnout since 1960. So don't fucking tell me it doesn't matter, because we gained like 7 trifectas. Trifectas are when we control the state house, the state senate, and the governorship, right? And so we gained 7 of those. They can do whatever they want. Some of those states can now have Medicaid expansion. Maine now has a Democratic governor, no longer has Paul LePage. Paul LePage, who was stopping Mainers from getting Medicaid, which they deserve, right? There are so many, there are other states where ballot measures passed and Medicaid expansion was on the ballot and it fucking passed. There are other states where recreational or marijuana use passed, and marijuana use passing that leads to decriminalization of marijuana and leads to better fucking DAs. There were really, really great liberal DAs and liberal judges who won. Yeah. We unseated some real fucking assholes. I know Beto didn't win, but if you look at the legislature in Texas, if you look at 9 black women who won judgeships, if you look at a lot of these house districts, they fucking won. Like Gina Ortiz Jones is like, could win. She could fucking win because the votes are still being counted. So, like, don't fucking tell me, oh, because Beto lost and Gillum lost and Abrams lost, the Democrats are weak and we can never achieve anything. Go fuck yourself. We unseated Scott Walker.
Fuck yourself.
We unseated Scott Walker. And it was so good.
And like, also,
so good.
That felt good. That felt really good. That was a good moment for me personally.
It was. Scott Walker, according to AFL-CIO Richard Tremka, is a national disgrace. But after Tuesday, he was a national disgrace.
Because he's the fuck out now. Well, that's the thing. And look, and I know that people keep saying this, and some people like to hear it, some people don't. But Beto O'Rourke might not have won. But you know what he did do? Is he made Texas into a battleground state. Because Ted Cruz shit his pants.
Yeah.
For 10 months straight, at least, during that campaign. Because no one thought Texas was ever in play. Mm-hmm. No one ever thought Texas was somewhere where Democrats could win or should even try. And Beto lost by tiny, tiny, tiny percentages.
Compared to previous races, right? This is like the first time a Democrat has come this close in a long fucking time. So
a long time.
I just want to be very clear. Like, I know he didn't win, but it was going to be a long shot, and he still gave it his all. He also just he drove to every fucking county in Texas every single day and talked to thousands upon thousands of voters. So there are thousands of new voters in Texas who are going to vote in 2020 who might vote for another Democratic senator when John Cornyn is up. Fuck John Cornyn.
Like, right. Well, and the other thing to remember here is I want to talk 2 more things about the midterms, and then we should probably move on. But the first one I want to talk about is this idea that people are calling for Beto or Stacey Abrams or Andrew Gillum to run for president in 2020. And I understand that
the love
draw the love
the
there
love
and
great.
I love them.
Yeah, I love them all.
The love is real. But I don't think any of those 3 should run for president in 2020.
They could run in 2024 because, or 2028.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to be right now to do it. The thing is right now, they are not what we need for 2020. Yeah. And I know that makes me sound like a centrist corporate shill, but you have to have a little bit of long game here, right? This is why the Republicans keep winning. You get angry that they're winning, but the reason that they win is because they have a little bit of long game and they don't put forth people like Beto in 2020 because they know That's nonsense.
Yeah, and it's not because
he's like...
And I'm not
saying we shouldn't put...
Yeah, it's Beto isn't actually like a crazy progressive or anything. Just to be clear, like he's pretty normal Democrat.
Oh, no.
The reason you shouldn't want a person like Stacey Abrams, Gillum, or Beto to run right now in 2020, not because I don't want to run ever. I think they're amazing people and I think they have great policies. It's more that you can't give the Republicans more ammo than they already have. And the ammo you would get from a Beto... Exactly. Abrams or Gillum is, oh, they've never had held statewide office. They've never held a nationwide office. Why should they be running, right? And this doesn't mean that I'm like, I'm suddenly endorsing Joe Biden. Like, that's not me. You know me. I'm not going to do that. I'm just saying, like, don't get too excited.
I don't want Joe Biden to run either.
Yeah, yeah. Don't get too excited before, like, 2019. Just calm down a little bit. You know, let's think about this.
Yeah. So, and the other, and what I said it, I think on Twitter, but here's what I truly believe. I think that there is a distinct possibility that my son will one day be able to cast a ballot for Stacey Abrams for president. But let's give her a little time because she is going to do great things.
Yeah. And she has a mission in Georgia. And let her finish what she wants to do in Georgia. She wants to make sure every single person in Georgia has the right to vote and is exercising their vote freely without anybody impeding their right. And let her do that instead of putting all this pressure on her to run immediately.
Right. Exactly. Let her. Yes, exactly. And she's going to do great things. You know, she, no matter what happens, Stacey Abrams is going to do something amazing.
Yep.
So let's just take that pressure off and let it go because I don't think that they are the right choices for this moment. That doesn't mean that they're not the right choices. It just means that we need to have a little bit of fucking long game, like Diane fucking Bentley, and just hold the receipts until we have a more strategic moment. And then the second thing I want to talk about is Nancy Pelosi.
Can I do this, please? Can I rant? Please, 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 please.
Yes. Okay. Please do.
Okay. So you motherfuckers out there who are just like, oh, Nancy Pelosi's such a shill. She's so centrist. She's basically a Republican in sheep's clothing. No. She's from fucking San Francisco. She's a San Francisco progressive. She's blatantly pro-choice. She's anti-gun. She's the reason Democrats grew a fucking spine during the Bush years and were like, oh, the Iraq war was a bad idea. She's the reason Republicans during the Bush years couldn't privatize Social Security. That was her. Democrats in her caucus when she was speaker in 2006 were like, oh, you know, what if we just cave? What if we like privatize a little bit of Social Security? She's like, no, fuck that. You know, literally what she said, they asked, when are we going to release an alternative plan? Her exact words were, never. Does that work for you? She's a badass boss bitch. Also, the job of speaker isn't to inspire you. Paul Ryan doesn't inspire Republicans. John Boehner doesn't inspire Republicans. Dennis Hastert, the fucking pedophile that he is, didn't inspire Republicans. Newt Gingrich isn't fucking inspiring. The job of a speaker is what Nancy Pelosi does best, which is whip the fucking vote, right? So if you want another speaker, go for it. I would love Barbara Lee as speaker. I would love another progressive woman as speaker. But right now, for this moment, it is important to give power to the most experienced, most competent, and amazing woman there is in the House. And that is her. If you had spent the past 18 months training and in the background to become speaker and you have the votes to replace Nancy, and you can say with 100% confidence you are just as good as whipping the vote as Nancy fucking Pelosi, fine, run for fucking speaker. But you're not. I guarantee you that.
Right.
Just saying.
Right. Well, and we can also, you know, there's also a thing here where you can do where you elect a whip, which is an actual position. So you elect the majority whip, and then you make that, let's say, Barbara Lee, just a thought. And then she spends the next term learning from Nancy Pelosi and then is ready to take over when Nancy Pelosi is done. Again, you don't just jump in cold to this kind of shit. This is important. And that's the other thing. Like, look. I've said this before and I will say it again. And not only is Nancy Pelosi the reason we didn't privatize Social Security, but she's also the reason that we have Obamacare at all. Because there were people in her caucus who didn't want it, who weren't going to vote for it. And you know, that bitch went to every single person's office personally and said, get your fucking life together, shut your fucking mouth, and vote for this.
Exactly.
And that's it. And we're not going to talk anymore. And the fact of the matter is like, people are like, oh, she just pretends to be about Medicare for all. Okay, first of all, There are two branches of legislature. There's two branches in legislature, which is the House and the Senate. So Nancy Pelosi isn't doing anything by herself. We still don't have the majority in the Senate. Medicare for all is not on the table. Take it off of the table, you fucking
lunatics.
Nitwits.
Nitwits. Nitwits is a better word. Because can we worry about Medicare for all when we have a Democratic president who will sign the bill? Or when we have 60 votes in the Senate? Like, why don't you vote for 60 votes in the Senate, and then we'll get Medicare for all? Because I promise you we will. When we have 60 votes in the Senate or a Democratic president, they are going to propose Medicare for all. Do you know why? Because it's like 70% popular. It's really fucking popular. Right. Democrats learned our lesson from 2016 and 2008. We get it. Everyone wants healthcare because we all want healthcare. It's really popular. Right. And not only will we get Medicare for all, we will spend the next 2 years prioritizing and not like getting our heads in the sky and forgoing the good or forgoing the good in search of the perfect, right? Nancy Pelosi is exactly what you need right now. She's not just good. She's perfect. And so people, if you want to complain about a leader, complain about Chuck Schumer. Okay, Chuck Schumer is a dumbass. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I'll shit on Chuck Schumer all day. Chuck Schumer is completely incompetent and he needs to be replaced.
He does.
That there is no Maisie doubt. Hirono. But Nancy Pelosi, Maisie Hirono, I'm just saying. Nancy Pelosi is the leader we need right now. She's not perfect. She is not, you know, she doesn't align on every single one of my values or beliefs. But guess what? Nobody fucking does. You need to grow the fuck up and get on this train while it's here. Because it would be very easy for us to fuck up this moment right now. And as Democrats, it's kind of what we're known for doing, is fucking up a good thing when it's handed to us. And putting some young, like self-absorbed white dude, self-proclaimed progressive, as Speaker of the House would be a really good example of throwing something good away with both.
Yeah. So like Seth Moulton, I know you're sitting in Massachusetts plotting your revenge against Nancy Pelosi right now. Fuck you. Just be a congressman. Just be a congressman. Let Nancy Pelosi lead because it's what she was fucking born to do. Suck it. I'm just saying that because like I just... It's so frustrating to me that like the first thing people turn to is that Nancy Pelosi is the one who's incompetent, not the fact that we as a country, as Democrats, fail to give her the House multiple times. She is good at what she does, guys. She's not supposed to align with every single one of your policy choices because she is supposed to get every single Democrat to align with the Democratic values that you all vote for. So you all vote for better healthcare. You all vote for no taxes for rich people. You all vote for no kids in fucking cages. Like, she represents all of that. So.
So I think everyone knows by now that I am pretty stressed out. And, you know, we live in a stressful environment, especially politically. It was really great to be contacted by Care Of, which is a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door. So you start by taking this super fun online quiz, and they ask you about your life and your goals and what you would want out of a supplement. And so for me, the entire goal of my supplement would be help me reduce stress. And they had tons of research and just information about which supplements could help me with that. 90% of people fall short of FDA recommended guidelines for at least one vitamin or nutrient. And you could take Care Of's quiz to get the vitamins you need to get back on track and reach your health goals, and also addressing some of your own personal goals like stress management. And these vitamins get delivered right to your door in a personalized, easy to remember daily packs, which is perfect for busy on-the-go lifestyles or me, who's not really an adult and is never very good at remembering to do something every day. And Care Of puts honesty first, providing all of the research that supports each of the recommendations backed by a scientific advisory board. Also, a portion of every sale goes towards the Good Plus Foundation, which provides expectant mothers in need with valuable prenatal vitamins. So you're taking care of yourself and you're helping to take care of others. They also offer vegan and vegetarian supplement options for all types of dietary needs. So it is a really, really great service. And like I said, the online test was super fun, very dedicated to helping me deal with my own goals. And so for all of us that are stressed out, we could all use a little care. So for 25% off your first month of personalized Care of vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter hellbent. That is takecareof.com and enter code hellbent for 25% off your first month of personalized Care of vitamins. So let's get you all healthy and less stressed, or at least we can take care of the stress better. So 25% off your first month of personalized Care of vitamins at takecareof.com with code hellbent. All right, Varsha. So about 5 seconds after the midterm election was sort of over, Sessions resigned. So can you tell us a little bit about that and what happened?
Yeah. So basically, Donald Trump gave a bonkers press conference. And then like 2 seconds after this press conference, where he's basically saying, oh, this was like this midterm was great for Republicans and all this stuff. Jeff Sessions released his resignation letter on Twitter. And then it came out that like Trump asked him to resign. And Sessions was like, what if I just stay until Friday? And John Kelly was like, no, man, you got to go or we'll fire you. So basically, it was a firing. But what happened after that is now the acting attorney general is Matt Whitaker, who's Sessions' chief of staff. Matt Whitaker is now in charge of the Mueller investigation because Matt Whitaker is not recused from the Russia investigation like Jeff Sessions was. And so now he takes power from Rod Rosenstein. And again, Rod Rosenstein isn't perfect, but Matt Whitaker is the fucking worst because he literally tweeted a few months ago about how Trump's lawyers shouldn't cave into the Mueller witch hunt. He tweeted that out, just out there, while he was working as chief of staff.
Right. Well, and like, let's also remember that in a normal moment, the next in line to be attorney general would be the deputy attorney general, which would be Rod Rosenstein. That's how this works. I don't want to gloss over the fact that we are completely skipping a major Democratic norm for no given reason.
Also, it's clear that the New York Times made it clear that the only reason Sessions was fired/resigned, mainly fired, is because Trump has been steaming for the past almost 2 years, or actually almost a year and a half, about how Jeff Sessions recused himself from the Russia investigation. Since that moment, Trump has been waiting for a chance to fire him. And now that he has control over the Senate, because they gained one seat and there's no way that the Senate, like no way Mitch McConnell isn't going to confirm somebody else, he's like, great, I got to fire the guy now. So it's literally, you remember like you learned in history class, the Saturday Night Massacre? This is it. It's been going on in slow motion for the past few months.
It's been a slow motion Saturday Night Massacre.
Because he's been delegitimizing the Mueller investigation. He's been delegitimizing DOJ, the FBI, and finally he pulled the trigger, which is firing Sessions.
Yeah, this is the break glass in case of emergency moment. This is the constitutional crisis we've been talking about. And if the acting attorney general, soon to be confirmed, I'm sure attorney general, is installed and tries to pull the plug on the Mueller investigation, we as a country are going to have to make a choice. We're already going to have to make a choice. But we are about to be put in I think one of the most blatant examples of the authoritarian creep of the Trump presidency so far. Because by doing this, he is making it very clear that he is using the office of the attorney general as a political position, because he is politically installing someone to protect him. And B, that the idea of rules and norms is no longer even like coded, right? It's not even like we're pretending.
And I just want to be clear, Whitaker has been explicit about how he dislikes the Mueller investigation, because he literally said about Mueller's investigation into the firing of James Comey, he said, there is no criminal obstruction of justice charge to be had here. There is no criminal case that could be substantiated on these facts, no matter how good of a witness Jim Comey appears to be. And he was very impressive. Like, he literally has already prejudged the investigation. So even if Trump doesn't pick Whitaker eventually to be confirmed and he picks somebody else, like, God forbid, Chris Kobach or Rudy Giuliani or Chris Christie, all four of those picks are going to be really, really fucking bad for the Mueller investigation. So here's where we go back full circle, back to the midterms, and why it does fucking matter that we won the House. Because now the heads of a lot of these amazing committees, I think they're called oversight committees. They do something called oversight. Mm-hmm. They're now controlled by Democrats.
Over
I know. Center? We've forgotten what checks and balances are. They're actually very important to democracy, Devin. How it works is some branches of government check the other branches, so none of the branches of government get too powerful or authoritarian. So the Republicans, under Paul Ryan, have been weak shit for the past 2 years. And now, because Nancy Pelosi is going to be Speaker, and now because Maxine fucking Waters is going to chair a committee, because Adam Schiff is going to be the head of a committee, because all these other fucking amazing Democrats are going to be heads of committee, they're going to investigate the shit out of this. So if Mueller is fired by January or whatever, what's going to happen, what better happen, what's clear is going to happen, because Nancy Pelosi is a boss-ass bitch, is they're going to bring in Mueller for some public-ass hearings and be like, hey, they fired you, man, but can you tell us what you said? Can you list all the crimes the president did? That'd be great. Thanks. And then they're going to impeach the guy because Trump firing Jeff Sessions and is part of a giant pattern, which is obstruction of justice in plain fucking sight. He's done it since he fired James Comey, to since he asked James Comey before he fired him to like take it easy on Flynn. And then he's done it since every single time he delegitimizes the Department of Justice, the Mueller investigation, or the FBI. It is obstruction of fucking justice. Also, there was a little tidbit in, I forget where I read this. There's a tidbit about how Donald Trump Jr. is telling his friends that he's worried he's going to be indicted. So there's another thread here where Donald Trump, the president, is trying to protect his kids, his family, all the cronies in his fucking orbit, right? Because that's what he does. He obstructs justice. It's his whole life story. The justice obstructor. Like, that's him. So
that's a superhero name. Yeah, the justice obstructor. Yeah. Look, here's the thing. Adam Schiff is about to fuck some shit up for Trump. Maxine Waters is about to fuck some shit up for Trump. And honestly, if Mueller gets fired, it almost is going to be more fun that way.
This is mean of me.
In like
say.
A sick, yeah. twisted, like in me being very sarcastic, this is the spy movie version of this life that we're all living together. But like, it's almost going to be more fun if he does it that way, because it's going to be so much more delicious when it all comes out anyway. It was all for naught. And Don Jr., you know, ends up in prison.
Because also it's literally following the Nixon playbook. So it's cool to see what history was like. You know, it's fun.
Right. It's cool to see it in real time. Never thought that would happen.
Scary, and you're afraid of a despot. But also it's interesting that it plays out so similar to Nixon. Like, just saying.
Well, this is where I go back to. Again, to bring back to the terms, this is where it does fucking matter. And this is where the change is actually happening, because it's not just these heads of committees, though that is extremely important. That is going to be the driving force here. But you have over 100 new women in Congress. You have 100 new women. You've got women from all backgrounds. You've got, you know, people from all backgrounds coming in and changing the shape of the legislature. And so that's going to infuse a new, 100 is so many people. I don't think people understand how many 100 is, because it is going to infuse new life into this Congress and the way that we approach problems and the way that we solve problems. And so there's a lot of scary shit coming down the pike, but what we did on Tuesday matters. Because it's shoring up just a little bit. I maybe I'm just an optimist, right? Maybe I'm just a Pollyanna pants optimist. But I believe in us. I believe in us as a nation. And I believe that I believe that we can get through this because we've shown that we can. We didn't win the big races that we wanted to win, but we've reshaped it.
And also, I just want to be clear, like, we did win a lot of races, a lot more than was expected. This is on par to be our margin of victory, like the margin of votes that we got, were higher than the 2010 midterms that the Republicans got. The reason we didn't win as many Senate seats and House seats is because of gerrymandering and malapportionment. So gerrymandering, you guys probably already know what that means, but malapportionment is basically where there are more people in LA County than the whole fucking state of Maine. Right? That's what malapportionment means. It means that like California, for some reason, even though it has the fifth largest economy and millions of more people, only gets two Senate seats, while North Dakota also only gets two Senate seats. And I know that's like blaming the system, but yeah, it is. The system itself, the Senate system, is rigged. And proof that it is rigged is that we got more votes than ever before since like fucking 1960 or something. We got more votes than Republicans do. Our prime, our popular vote margin is above 7 points right now, but we still only lost, we still lost three Senate seats and only gained one, right? So like that's the problem. And so I want people to take it into context. I know people like are going to say I'm making excuses if I when I tell you to take it into context, but it's not an excuse. It's important to think about how eventually one day, maybe not now because Republicans control a lot more governorships, but one day we have to think about amending the Constitution so we can break up states and give statehood to new states and give more senators to states. Like, we have to figure out what's broken in our Constitution. And one of the main things is the Senate. And that's not like radical for me to say. People have been saying it for decades.
So I also want to take a few minutes to talk about a sort of under the radar story. Obviously there's been a lot of hoopla around midterms and then Jeff Sessions resigning slash firing, as we said, the slow motion Saturday Night Massacre. The Trump administration has finalized the rollback of Obama's contraception protection, that said that you had to cover contraception regardless of religious affiliation. And so the Trump administration successfully rolled that back. So Varsha, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So basically the ACA, right? It said that employers have to give contraception to their employees. It has to provide the coverage for it in their insurance plans, regardless of whether or not you're like super Christian or super whatever, and you don't believe in contraception. The new rules under the Trump administration are set to take place in around 60 days, which says if employers object morally to the use of birth control, they can stop paying for their workers' contraception, specifically for the insurance aspect of their workers' contraception. So this is going to affect at least 6,400 women and at most 127,000 women. But eventually, it could affect a lot more than 127,000 women because the rule threatens contraception for more than 55 million cisgender women, so, and an unknown number of transgender and non-binary people. So this rule is going to affect a lot of fucking people, right? Also, you know, not mentioned in all the articles I read about this is this rule also affects men, because there are men out there who don't want to have kids, who like having sex and don't want to have kids. There are women out there.
There are men out there who again, there's no good trans stats, but there are men out there who take birth control.
Yeah.
There are men out there who, this is always framed as a women's issue, and it is. Birth control is a very, very specific women's issue. Except that it's not, because it's a fucking human issue.
Yeah.
You know, like,
Yeah. So basically, like, the reason this is such a big deal is because they are literally chipping away at any separation between church and state. They are literally making it legal for Christians to discriminate against people who they don't see as following Christian values. They're making Christian values, or specifically one type of Christian values, right? No, I don't think all Christians believe that contraception is evil or something, right? They're making it really specific, one white male patriarchal Christian value where contraception is bad, so is abortion, so are all women. Women are evil. They're making that the norm, and they're making it easier to discriminate against women. And this
this idea of moral, if they morally object, what does that even mean? Exactly. Like, they morally object to it. That's such a squishy thing. It's such a squishy fucking definition. Like, there's no stand. Again, this goes back to like, there's no standards of what, you know, closely held religious beliefs means exactly. And so it's very much a gray area that can be used to, so this is also a way in for companies to discriminate against anyone who doesn't fit with their, idea of moral objectivity.
Just to be clear, like, you got everyone listening to this already knows limiting abortions can be deadly and will kill women, because women, it's just healthcare, right? Limiting contraception also can be deadly. Women and men and whoever, they take contraception for other reasons besides birth control. It can be used to prevent ovarian cancer. It can be used to limit other pain. It can be used to treat endometriosis. Like, it is a serious medical thing. It's why it exists, because it has multiple uses, right? And so when you do that, it also like it can seriously endanger the lives of thousands of women, but also it sends a message to a bunch of fucking pharmacists out there in this country who think they can withdraw prescriptions from women. They can like withhold prescriptions from women because it's been happening at a higher rate where a woman goes in for basically a medical abortion medication, right? And usually it's because, not because she quote unquote wants the abortion or quote unquote was irresponsible, usually because she's miscarried and she needs to safely miscarry. And she needs the medication so the miscarried fetus in her stomach or in her uterus doesn't kill her. And there are pharmacists, this happened twice in the past couple months that I've read. There were literally pharmacists who did not believe the woman when she said, this is about my safe miscarriage. I'm not aborting a baby. But even if she was aborting a baby, who the fuck cares, right? So this is why it's so dangerous. It makes it seem as if women and men deserve separate levels of care based on some abstract morals. And it's fucking stupid.
Or that women are somehow incapable of selecting their own medical care. Right, that somehow they have to defend their wants and needs from a medical perspective, or that they have to get permission to have medical care from another
just
person.
Just to be like fun. There's a historical example to this. Obviously, I mean there are a lot of, but I'm reading. I told listeners about this last week, but I'm reading a book about antebellum sex with my students, and literally a bunch of the articles talk about how women in the 19th century should not have access to contraception because it's dangerous and all this other stuff. And again, I don't know how effective contraception was in the 19th century, but basically it was belittling women's choices, right? And there were also radicals in the 19th century who were like, no, fuck that. Women can do whatever the fuck they want. And then
which still feels radical today, right? Yeah. I mean, you say it's radical then in the 19th century, but saying that is still a fairly radical position in the year 2018.
Yeah. And then in the 1870s, the government, the US government passed a law called the Comstock Law, which basically prohibited mailers about sex and sexuality and also like contraception. So like doctors who gave out contraception, who sold contraception, could no longer advertise because of this law. Right. So there have been repressions against women's health for centuries. And this is just another egregious example, but this is definitely going to kill women. I don't care if you think I'm being quote unquote hysterical. I'm not. There are fucking stats behind this. So go fuck yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this is just one of those things too, where it's hard. There's so much going on, right? And there are so many hugely nationally important things that these little things slip in undetected a lot of the time. But this is where it's so important to get to build that majority in Congress, to get the diverse set of representatives, because that's how we're going to fight this, because that's how we're going to ultimately get
And I am
this.
Pretty sure there's a comment period for this, just like there is for a lot of other rule changes. So everyone should go check that out and comment and tell them to keep their hands off of your birth control, because it's fucking stupid and messed up.
Oh, okay. So I think for today, we are going to keep this episode a little bit on the short side. Mm-hmm. It has been a stressful week. It's been a stressful 10 weeks. It's been a stressful 2 years, to be perfectly fucking honest. so we are going to leave you with that. Yeah. But we will be back here together on Monday with lots more to talk about, with a renewed sense of vigor. I mean, I feel like we need to take some time. We've done such good work, and we're going to come back here on Monday pissed off and ready to raise some hell.
Yeah. Also, like, Tuesday was great. People should like go, like, I don't know if people actually journal, but I'm like a basic bitch who does journal. So I journaled on Wednesday, and it was good because I journaled about a lot of stuff. I journaled about winning. I journaled about my post-election burrito, because I was like so hungry. I just ordered a burrito.
I was starving. Yeah. Oh my God. As soon as I voted, I realized I haven't been eating properly for the past 2 years, and I was starving.
But yeah, the past 2 years have been a rocky fucking ride, guys. I know. Yeah. It's been really, really intense. But the next 2 years could be worse. So
buckle up. Everyone, take a breather. Yeah. Send prayers to Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I know. She's recovering from 3 broken ribs. Please send prayers to her. Yeah. She can't die. Perform all the spells you need if you're a witch.
Exactly.
Like, whatever happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yes. But we will be back here on Monday. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Raise some hell and take a nap.